out of the gray, all we need. Yes. Are we reaching out to touch? Are we sharing his love with each other? And when I say with each other, I don't mean just with our fellow churchgoers. I mean with anyone around us. The person at the grocery store. A quick prayer for the person who just cut us off on the street as we were driving down the road, minding our own business, heading home. All right. I mentioned to you before that we're going to be hearing from a number of people with regards to this whole issue of whether or not we believe in God. Our focus itself, and that's why I'm pointing out some of the things that we do that can really challenge our notion, our story, our claim that we do truly believe in God. Remember what I shared with you in the beginning. Believing in God has to do with more than just believing, more than just acknowledging that he exists. And I mean acknowledging it and meaning it. Yes, God is real. Yes, God is alive. God is real. He exists. He lives in heaven. Remember, I reminded you that the demons also believe all of that, and they tremble. But do they embrace his righteousness? Do they embrace his holiness? Do they live a lifestyle that is pleasing to God? Absolutely not. They were created righteous in the beginning. They were created as angels, holy angels. And they were in God's presence routinely, in his presence, there, seeing him face to face. They decided that they no longer wanted to be connected with him, just like a lot of humans decide. They decided they wanted to go their own way. They wanted to rebel against God. And they're paying a price for it to this day. And the price that they're going to pay in eternity is going to be much worse than the price they're paying today. Oh, yes, they do a lot of stuff that causes a lot of folks a lot of trouble, no doubt about it. But they still have no way of experiencing true peace. They have no way of experiencing pure joy. The only joy they can ever experience is dark joy that really does not bring good fulfillment. How many people who are churchgoers who say you love God, who say you love the people of God, who put up that facade pretending as you hug people at church that you truly love them, when you know that behind their backs you do things to try to harm them? That's why I'm calling this connecting with God, this part of the discussion about whether or not we truly believe in God, connecting with God, starting with self. Let's listen to the story that the Jewish man shares about Jesus and believing.
All in black. You've got to wear a white robe, eat only kosher foods. You've got to become a vegetarian. You face Jerusalem. You've got to face India when you pray. You pray only in Hebrew, and you grow a nice big beard. And if you do all of those outward cultural things, you'll discover the God of the universe. And I'm thinking, this is crazy that someone thinks that they can force their culture on God, and that God's going to be impressed by what you wear, what direction you face when you pray, what you eat, and all these sorts of things. It seemed to me that if there was a God out there who could be known, he should be able to be recognized no matter where I face, no matter how I'm dressed, because he's God.
Now, I know some of you might be thinking, okay, well, yeah, oh, that's obvious. I mean, who wouldn't know that? But how many of us think that by getting on our knees and praying to God, and that by going to church 1 to 3 times a week, and that by studying our Bible 4 or 5 times a week, maybe even spending 3 hours per day studying, that's how we get to know God? That's how we prove to ourselves and to God that we genuinely love him and know him and embrace him and honor him and worship him? How many of us have concluded that because I wear my clothes in this way, I don't wear my pants hanging down around my hips, and I don't wear clothes that fit tight. I wear clothes that are somewhat loose fitting so that I'm not revealing the shape of my body. And that's got to be proof that I truly believe in God, that I am a true follower of Christ. If there's no sincerity in the heart, all of those are just empty motions. Well, let's listen to our guest again.
Growing up, we always understood that we had our Bible and the Gentiles had their Bible, the New Testament, and that they were two completely separate books. Because the only people I knew who were believers in Jesus were all people in our public school who were Italian Catholic, I imagined that Jesus was Italian. And so the understanding that he's actually Jewish was a shock. And then to hear that the New Testament was written by Jews, I couldn't believe it. My expectation was that the New Testament was like my grandparents had told me. It was a book on how to persecute the Jews, and it's something you should stay away from. Of course, when you're told you should stay away from something, curiosity gets the best of you, and you've got to see it. When I opened the New Testament, I was expecting to find a handbook on how to persecute the Jews. My grandparents had warned me that it was written by people who killed the Jews. That's what I was expecting to see, and yet when I'm opening it, I'm reading a story written by Jews about Jewish people. The New Testament was a fascinating book. And so as I opened this book in the library, I kind of looked around, made sure that none of my friends had seen me taking a Christian Bible off the shelf. And I open it, here's the first sentence. It says, "This is the genealogy of Jesus the Messiah, the son of David, the son of Abraham." So 3 people are mentioned, and they're all Jewish. I was very shocked. And as I continued to read, I'm reading the story of a Jewish man who was born in a Jewish village, in a Jewish country, and one day walks into a synagogue and announces that he is the Messiah. The more I read the words of Jesus, the more I became attracted to him. It was as beautiful as anything I had ever read in any other part of the Bible. As I came to faith that Yeshua, that Jesus was the Messiah, it was clear that that was the most Jewish thing I could do. This is not a person who's a renegade to our people. This is the one who was promised in our Bible, the 53rd chapter of Isaiah. It is astonishing. If you would just read that chapter, just without the Bible being around it, you would say, oh, this is some Christian Bible. This is Jesus. When you realize, though, that it's in the middle of our Bible, our Jewish Bible. When I first came to faith, I dared not tell my father, because this is a time period in the 1970s when there were lots of gurus and cults, and he was very concerned about me getting involved in some crazy sect and going off someplace. So I waited for months, and when I finally told him, he was very skeptical.
talk about courage. And remember now, I was sharing with you earlier today that we've got to love Jesus more than we love our earthly family members. But did you notice something as you listened to Kylie, the young lady who was talking? You listened to this Jewish man as he talks. One of the things that they had in common, they were both thinking, and their thought process helped them come to the conclusion that Jesus is the Messiah and they needed to be saved. More in just a few.